Good morning. Okay, perfect. Thank you. I'm going to take a little bit of a different tack, and I'm going to talk specifically about one program that Project Hope has put in and how that has worked in the United States, and then draw from that a little bit about the modeling and what we may need to do going forward with these programs to prevent some of the chronic diseases and give people a chance to help themselves. So specifically, I know this year, wellness and prevention are really the keys that people are talking about, and this program speaks very strongly to that. It's really been an exemplar program for Project Hope and all the people that have worked on it. So, first of all, the project is funded by United Health Group, and it is in New Mexico, the USA. So we have a majority-minority state, which is mostly Hispanic, Native American, Indian, with a smattering of the rest of us that are out there. And so we have all of those types of diseases or predilection for disease that you're going to find in specific populations. So we have something called the Habits for Life program. It has a number of components and separate goals. And the goals of the program really are to increase access to screening services throughout the state. And what we do in New Mexico, these are all free services, so we're not charging people to come and get their screening. We also are providing youth education, and we had developed books for the children's program, the children's fair that you heard about before, that were specific to New Mexico. So we go into the schools and we work with the children and their teachers, and then leave behind the tools so that they can help the kids become alert to changing habits from a very young age. The children like the books. They have actually said, gee, this makes me want to get healthy. And so they have a lot of fun with this program. It's very interactive. It gets them up. It gets them moving. And what the other goal that we're doing is we're trying to sustain capacity for wellness services, both with workplace wellness, with FQHCs, and in any place we can get hold of people. Okay, and you'll hear a little bit more about that. So we've integrated this into a lot of places. We have a faith-based program on Sundays. We found that we don't have as many men coming in for screening because, you know, they're big and tough and strong, and so they're not going to get this stuff, right? And so their wives will drag them in after church on Sunday. And so we go and we get more men coming in that way, which is wonderful. But even with those goals, there was a bigger idea for this program, and that idea really was about, can you have an outside entity, because Project Hope is mostly international, and so we don't really belong to New Mexico per se. So we're outside of the normal patterns that you see in health services and what goes on in a state. So could an NGO, non-government organization, or a neutral entity, and I like to tell the people that I speak with, like the boards of commissioners and stuff, you know, we're like Switzerland. We're neutral. We are absolutely like Switzerland. And so we can cross these silos of interest. You know, everybody has their grant money. Everybody has this interest and that interest. And we're really there to facilitate and help tip you and bring people together. So there's a real collaborative role with multiple organizations throughout the state. So this collaborative approach has taken in, these are only like a few of the people we work with. I'm becoming very challenged in trying to figure out, you know, who's who, and geez, I know I saw you before, was it Mary, Jane, or Tom? I can't quite remember your name. But we work with the United Health Group, which has just been a fabulous organization to work with. We have a wonderful board of people. They're very astute and very, very helpful. Another one of our partners is VisionQuest Biomedical, and this is an organization that's working under an NIH grant to prevent blindness. And so their goal is to do 10,000 screenings, retinal screenings. And so we have a non-midriatic camera, and we screen for free people that may or may not have eye disease all over the state. And I'll talk a little bit about those results. And it's just been a wonderful partnership, both for training, for reach, and for getting at people. We're also working with community, private, and government organizations. And again, as you've heard from, I know, a number of speakers, these are absolutely key. We work with the Presbyterian Medical Services. It's an FQHC system throughout New Mexico. We utilize the sites. They can target populations for us. We require everything be open to the whole community. And then we have a referral base for people that need urgent care as opposed to sending them to the emergency room, although we do sometimes have to do that as well. We're working with the Department of Health and Human Services in Dona Ana County in the border areas. The border areas are tough. You know, you don't hear enough about what's going on down there. They are very tough areas. They have a lot of problems. California is very aware of them, I know, Arizona, any of the border communities. But there's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of violence. And there are just a lot of issues where people do not have access to health. And we also work with schools, special event organizers, University of New Mexico, La Clinicas, and then in phase two with the RGK Foundation to take diabetes education and implement the national network of diabetes education that they're rolling out around the country. So now, who do we serve? Okay, well, we have more women than men, so we're trying to get at the men. We've tried car shows and some different things like that, which has been very helpful. But the best results that we're getting is when that wife says to that husband, you're important and you need to get tested. So that's what we're doing. We have a really nice mix of age. In ethnicity, it really represents what we have in the state. So we have mostly Hispanic population. And we have about 33% of the people that we see that have answered the questionnaire without health coverage. And of those that have not answered the questionnaire, it's more than 40%. It's about 42% statewide for those people that we've screened. About 55% of the people that we see are working. That doesn't mean they have insurance. Many of them work in situational or seasonal work. And they may be picking during the day. They come home. They take a nap for a few hours. And then they go out and they work in the food service industry, packaging and things in some of the factories and all along the border areas. New Mexico is a poor state, so we don't have a whole lot of money out there. Unemployment is high. We're facing the same problems everyone else is, but with less infrastructure and lots of problems. So that's who we serve. And where have we been and what have we found? Well, we have been in all these areas that you see red dots. Now, there's a lot more red dots. But we thought it was better if we just put one in each of the counties because otherwise it just looked a little bit whatever. So we have done over 10,000 biometric screenings on people for cholesterol, the components of cholesterol. We're looking at their BMI, their blood pressure, their weight, all of that. And we talk to them about it. We have a 7% rate of diagnosed diabetes where people come in with diabetes. And sometimes that's with a blood sugar in the 500s. So you know that they're headed for the ER. And I have had to say to people when I'm out doing quality control checks, how are you feeling? Are your eyeballs spinning in your head? You know, are you thirsty? You know, because these people are getting ready to hit the emergency room in a coma. They're in bad shape. 18% of the people we see are pre-diabetic. And they're absolutely pre-diabetic. And I don't have the number for cholesterol, and I do apologize. It's actually quite high. We have about 11% of the people we see with a high cholesterol, over 200, and those over 240 are running at about 8%. We've done over 5,175 retinographies. It's about 5,400 right now. And we have a disease burden in those under 65 not diagnosed with diabetes that is about 2%. And that is for urgent services that they need. So in terms of the return on investment for our programs, with the most conservative estimate I could find in a Cochrane review, we've saved over $10 million in quality of life years lost and productivity just with the retinal program alone. And we do hear from people constantly, you know, about how well this program serves them. So how does the model work? Because we were just new to New Mexico. Well, first of all, the foundation for this program is based in the need and the value that is provided. Project Hope's intent is to make people independent. You know, teach someone to fish and they will be able to fish for life. So we wanted to embed what we were able to do in the grander scheme into the community so that it builds the sustainability in the ecosystem of healthcare, okay, within New Mexico. So basically, we looked at the value of biometric and retinal screening, and there's a hidden value in this. You'll hear if you go to a lot of conferences that we're moving into personalized healthcare. How many of you have an app somewhere on your phone that has something to do with health? Is there anybody that doesn't? Okay, not a whole bunch of you. Okay, and if you're with the military, you should, because they have all sorts of apps. So we're moving into personalized healthcare, but the basis of that is knowing your own numbers. You know, so if you're going out jogging and you want to know what's going on with your heart, you have a little monitor. Well, what's your cholesterol doing? You know, what is the cheese that you're eating, which is my downfall, I'm going off cheese, and what does that do to your cholesterol when you're doing that and you're eating a lot of meat? You know, have you seen your numbers go up? Are you tracking that? So what we're trying to do is give people the power of their own numbers in this program, and it's working. So some of the assumptions people make about people that are poor, don't have access to health care, they just don't hold. We give people counseling after we do the screening for them. We tell them, we give them a pedometer, tell them to go walk 10,000 steps, and we leave some of these little colonias and towns that are in the dust of New Mexico, and I do mean dust. And these people are out walking. They got a scarf over their head like in the old spaghetti westerns, and they are walking on these dirt roads. So people will help themselves. Give them the power of their numbers. Look at what's going on in that community and link up with it. And sometimes there's nothing. At least that's what we found in some of our communities. And in other communities, there are a lot of things, but they're not connected. And we're neutral, so we get to connect them. We also utilize change mechanisms in organizations. And if you're lucky enough and blessed enough to find a couple people in some of the government organizations that are truly change agents, make them your best friend. Take them to dinner, take them to lunch, and make them your best friend, because they have a motivation and a goal that they want to serve. And we did that with one of the directors in Dona Ana County has a husband who is blind, legally blind. And so we worked with her to put in uninsured services where there were none in the past. Okay. So the advantages of using a mobile health delivery model, because we have a great big 18-wheeler, we're nimble. We can go anywhere, and we do. We have reach. We can get out around the state to these frontier areas that literally have one person per square mile. Now look out the window at how many people are sitting here just in one block. Multiply that times a square mile, and they've got one person. There's a lot of these places out there that just don't have, they don't have access. So we address geographic areas where there is no chance of establishing permanent services because they don't have enough population to support it. We create opportunities, and we seed within those communities the capacity building potential and cost effectiveness. It's much more cost effective because we can't build anything. And in terms of return on investment, I have a video, but I don't think it's going to work. But in terms of return on investment, the Mobile Clinics Association, if you're doing this through mobile technologies, has an immature instrument on return on investment that Dr. Nancy Oriel out of Harvard and some colleagues have put together. And we have about using that instrument, and it is weighted for emergency avoidance and other things. We're returning about a 15-to-1 benefit to the healthcare system, excluding the retinographies for the under 65 because there are no guidelines and prevention services that have been written for them. So we know the program works. We know that the education, we've most recently given some education and training to 4 health systems and 2 communities that are starting their own national diabetes prevention program in those communities. And they have hundreds of people lined up. Their problem is, because we've done the A1C testing, we know people want the class, we know they need the class, and they will attend the class, you can only have about 15 people in each of those classes. So our issue is really a resource issue in terms of time and controlling the expectation of the community. We can't come in and train them all at one time. So we're calling it a demonstration so that people won't be disappointed, and we'll tell them we're getting the kinks out so we can continue them this way, because otherwise there are too many people who want to help themselves and don't have the opportunity. So that's what we found. It's been a great program. You can reach me at any of these addresses, and I'll take questions afterwards. Thank you.